Good evening, everybody. I won't talk about how I somehow became Josh number two, but I will say that I've, like Josh number one, have appreciated my time here. I don't have really any connections to Indiana in general, let alone Indianapolis, but I'm thankful that I do now. I'm grateful for how kind all of you have been to us. All the good food, all the good company. And though our stay has been brief, I feel very confident in the prayers that are going to be offered on our behalf and thankful for those. And I just want you to know that that's not lost on us. And so even though we may not spend much more time together this side of heaven, I'm grateful that we've gotten a chance to be with you. So thank you for that. I wanted to talk a little bit about what we're going to be doing here in the next couple months. And so as you can see behind me, that's what I'm going to do. But before I talk about maybe some of the logistics, I want to say a couple things. My wife and I, who she's not here this weekend, obviously, we have lived in Atlanta for the whole time we've been married, which has been about 4.5 years. This May would be 5 years for me to be there. And when we moved there, we helped start a church that's now meeting in downtown Atlanta, and we're about a group of 15 to 20 on a typical Sunday. So it's not a large group by any means, but I've been very thankful to be there. And so I want to preface everything I'm going to say about San Francisco with my thankfulness for that group and how they are thankful for you guys. On one hand, I guess you could say that they shouldn't be because I'm leaving them. They shouldn't be thankful for you guys helping me leave them. But they are because I was able to even go to a place like Atlanta because of people like you. I've been supported to even be there. And so just know that you have brothers and sisters that are meeting in the city of Atlanta. So if you ever pass through, feel free to try to find them and meet with them. They'd appreciate that encouragement. But that's where we've been the last 5 years, and so we have some familiarity with doing this kind of thing, but certainly this is Atlanta, maybe a couple fold over. This is going to be the next big challenge for us in our personal walk and in our faiths. And certainly for Josh and Katie, I've talked to him enough to feel like I can say this on their behalf. They're looking forward to the challenge ahead of them and the transition that they're facing, but they certainly are... I don't know if anxious is the right word because I don't want to portray anything negatively, but they're certainly looking forward to the changes and the challenges that they have ahead of them. And so I'm going to be sort of speaking on behalf of, I guess, the five of us as I'm presenting this. So certainly, if you have more questions, if you have more thoughts about this, you could talk to me about it, but certainly you could talk to him about it as well. He knows just as much about this as I do. I just happen to be the one up here. In fact, some of these slides are representative of information or even slides Josh Carter has put together in the past, and so I want to kind of acknowledge that as well. What kind of got this going, and I'll tell this story briefly, is after a few years of being told about this Bible study thing in San Diego, I finally decided to go. This was in 2016. And I met a man there named Mike Wilson. Some of you may have heard of him or maybe even know him personally. He preaches in the San Jose, South Bay area. And he's been there pretty much his whole life. He was raised there. I think he had a short stint in Birmingham, Alabama, but has pretty much been there. And so I had visited San Francisco when I went to see a friend several years ago. And it was my first trip and only trip up until that one that I'd ever been to California. And so in the back of my mind, I'd always just kind of wondered, are there Christians in San Francisco? Just out of curiosity. And so when I met him, I thought, he's kind of near there. Maybe he'll know something about it. And so I asked him. And Mike, having grown up in that area, and if you know him or if you ever meet him, he loves history. And so he was just like, oh, well, you know, that's interesting that you ask. I could tell you some things about the history and da 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 da. So he gives me his contact information. I really don't think too much about it. I think, okay, well, he seems kind of nice. Maybe I'll email him about that sometime. Well, I email him, and an email turns into a phone call, and we're kind of talking back and forth, and he doesn't know who I am, really. He just met me at this thing. And I tell him, yeah, I live in Atlanta. I helped start this church a few years ago with some other people, and da-da-da-da, and we're talking, and he says, huh, that's funny. Have you ever thought about coming out here? Because we need one of you out here in San Francisco. And I said, no, I've never thought about that. Not really. And he was like, well, do you have any interest in that? And I said, no, not really. Because we weren't looking to leave Atlanta. And this is 2016. This was in January that I met him. And somehow, I believe it was in June or July, I can't remember, but in one of those months, somehow my wife and I have been convinced by Mike to come to the Bay Area of California and just kind of check things out. And so June or July after that January, we were out there. My wife had never been before. And I told my wife, we were dating when I moved to Atlanta to do this thing there. And I told her, I said, you know, I think this is the path that I want my life to go down, Lord willing. I want to try to work in places where maybe churches haven't been in a while or ever been. Try to do urban work because that's where a lot of people are, and certainly the gospel is for people, and so I want to go to these places. And so Atlanta, I grew up in Alabama. My wife's from Mississippi. So I thought Atlanta's kind of the first step, right? Like it's unfamiliar to us, but it's not so far away that like we're going to, you know, kill ourselves first go with no experience and not know what we're taking on. And so that was kind of our first step. And so my wife reminds me when we're out in California. She says, well, you did say that this was maybe a first step and like you want to keep your eyes open to more opportunities like this. And I said, yeah, you're right. And so we thought and prayed about it. And I think in August or September, a month or two after we took that trip, I reached out to Mike and I said, you know, I think this is our next step. I think you're right. Well, I start thinking, okay, well, I don't want to leave Atlanta without someone to come behind me. And I don't want to leave Atlanta without someone to go with me. And so that's when I started reaching out to people. And even though Josh and I didn't know each other very well, we crossed paths a few times. We had several very close mutual friends. And so we knew of each other. And so he actually was one of the first people I contacted. And so I said, hey, Josh, good to see you. Small talk. Do you want to move to San Francisco? It's a great way to start a friendship, by the way. And he was like, that's really interesting to me. I want to be a part of something like that, but the timing's not right. And so, because we were thinking about moving in 2017 in the spring. If you don't know me very well, which basically none of you do, when I make a decision, I just like to go for it. Like, I don't like to wait too long because I'm afraid I'll get cold feet or something. I just like to try to do it then. And so I didn't love that idea. Like, I didn't love postponing it. But that didn't work out. I couldn't find anybody to go with me. I couldn't find anybody to come behind me. And so I was like, maybe this isn't going to work out. Maybe this is God's way of saying, like, this isn't the right thing for you, or maybe not right now. So I started thinking, well, maybe if I push it back a year to the spring of 18, here we are, maybe things would work out better. And that's when I found out the guy that was planning to come behind me in Atlanta, he said I could come for that time frame. And then Josh Carter said, well, maybe if you were going to wait a year, I could come. And so things just kind of fell into place that way. And so I said, okay, well, maybe this is God's way of saying you should go in the spring of 18. As a believing person, that's just kind of how I interpret it. And so here we are. We're talking about San Francisco for the spring of 2018. My wife and I, we're going to move in the middle of April, mid-late April. They're going to be about 6 weeks behind us. And so that's kind of what got us to this point. So I wanted to kind of explain that up front, kind of our decision-making process, where we've been, and kind of how we got to this point right now. So here we are. I've been surprised by the number of you that have said, you know, like, oh, I've been to San Francisco. And a lot of you have said, like, multiple times even for business trips or whatever. So great, you know, like, it's a nice place. It's great to be a tourist there. There's lots of interesting things to see and do if you've never been. The media will tell you, at least minimally, there's some interesting things there, right? Certainly, I've never lived there, so I've only ever been a tourist on my visits or, visiting. But there's a lot to say about it, and if you're not a numbers person, you can just kind of zone out for the next couple minutes, and we'll come back to some other things that might be more meaningful to you. But if you're not familiar with San Francisco, here's just some objective facts about it, right? So the population is almost 900,000 people, which when you're thinking of the great cities of the world, that doesn't really like mean a whole lot. I mean, there's a lot bigger of cities out there by pure number. But then you consider the land area, it's just under 47 square miles. People generally talk about it as being kind of 7 by 7 miles across and miles long. Obviously, it's not exactly that, but that's close. So it's a very tight space, obviously bounded by water on three sides. The city and the county share the same boundaries, so they're actually consolidated. So San Francisco City is the county, and the county is the city. It's a very small area. So when you consider that 900,000 people live in that small of a space, it actually comes out to almost 19,000 people per square mile. To give you kind of a comparison point, I didn't look up Indianapolis, which wouldn't be nearly that, I'm sure. But Atlanta is about, I think, 2,000 people per square mile. And so if you think about San Francisco being almost five times that, the only city in the United States that has a higher population density is Manhattan. So San Francisco is very densely populated, and it has what they call a minority-majority population, and all that means is there's no ethnicity that breaks the 50 percentile mark that contributes to the population there. So you have 42% that are white, 33% Asian, 15% Hispanic Latinos, 6% African American, and so on and so forth down the line. San Jose, where Mike Wilson is, the guy that kind of got this rolling for us, is actually even more diverse than San Francisco is. It's about an hour south in the South Bay. I think it's closer to like 35%, 33% in the same kind of breakdown here. So it's a very diverse area in the Bay Area. It has the second highest percentage of households with a bachelor's degree of any major city, which probably doesn't surprise most of us considering what it's been known for the last 20 or 25 years, with the tech boom in Silicon Valley being near San Jose and all of those things. All of our favorite, most hated companies are from there. You know, the Facebooks of the world, the Apples of the world, Microsoft, all of them have a big presence there. And any time you have a big city with nice weather, naturally it's going to have a lot of homeless people that live there. And certainly San Francisco has been dealing with that for the last several years particularly. And so you can see that number on the slide as well. So that's just some of the numbers. That doesn't tell us about the city's character or anything like that. That's just numbers. If you're a numbers person, this is your stuff. If you're not, thank you for bearing with me. We'll move on to the next part here, which is more numbers. This relates more directly to maybe some of the things that we're talking about. San Francisco has a stigma about it. It has a stereotype that probably most of us are aware of. In fact, we get a lot of comments when we tell people that we're moving to San Francisco regarding some of these stereotypes and stigmas. And they're stereotypes and stigmas for a reason. They're, by and large, true things that about the place or the people there. But I think this is interesting to most people when they see kind of this percentage breakdown. You'd expect, given the stereotype or the stigma, that the no religion part would be the highest one, and it's actually not, which when I found this, I actually thought myself was a little surprising. It's very large, and it's much higher than maybe most cities in the United States, but it's not as high as you might assume. There's 48% that regard themselves as Christian, and of course that's a broad umbrella. It's painting with a broad brush stroke there. But it's 48% Christian, and then you have 35% that kind of say, oh, I don't believe anything, or I'm atheist, or I'm agnostic, whatever. And then on down the line, you have Hindu and Jewish and Buddhist and Muslim. And part of the stigma or stereotype of San Francisco has to do with the LGBTQ, and I think that acronym's gotten even longer to include I and A and some other letters. That kind of ends up being kind of its own belief system in a lot of ways in the way the city functions. And so these are some of the numbers that begin to paint a picture of what San Francisco kind of is in the eyes of the beholder, right? It's a lot of people packed into a really small place with some water and a lot of, as we're concerned, not Christian people, right? And a lot of these things are exactly the reasons we decided to go. When Mike talked to us, he started saying a lot of this kind of stuff to us. And what might be a typical reaction is kind of like, run away, don't go there, right? But I think the gospel reaction that we'll talk a little bit more about later is actually run to there. Like, I should go there. And so that is kind of the underlying drive for us as we see all these people in this place that's kind of characterized by these numbers. and there's a lot of immigrants, and there's a lot of second languages and third languages spoken, and there's a lot of opportunity to be had in that, and giving people an opportunity to decide for themselves, when presented with truth, what they want to believe. And so that's a big part of why we're going. As a side note here, we're going to come back to Luke 18 at the very end. If you're still holding on to that, stay there. If not, you can go ahead and kind of put a marker there or get there on your iPad or whatever. We're going to come back to that text. But this comes back, it circles back to this question that we're asked a lot. I know I've been asked this question a whole bunch of times. I know Josh has been asked this question a whole bunch of times. And it's a good question. It's probably the first question that should be asked. It's the first question I asked Mike when he said, "Have you thought about this?" And I was like, "No, why would I?" Right? Well, when Mike presented us kind of the information, this is some of the stuff that he either said to us or immediately kind of cropped up in our minds when we considered the question. There's no one known among brethren doing this work. And certainly I want to caveat everything I say about this stuff with God knows who among the earth are his. Like, I don't have perfect knowledge of that, nor do you, nor does any, you know, database or directory or anything like that. But certainly there's no one that we know making an effort to teach the gospel there. And certainly among those that we maybe do know are trying to do that, we would disagree probably pretty seriously on some major biblical points. And so we thought, okay, there's no one doing this work, and so maybe that's an answer to why we should go. Fundamentally, we don't know of anybody doing it, and here we are, we're willing, so maybe we should be sent. That sounds familiar, right? Here I am, send me. Another thing that we considered is what I mentioned earlier, is that there's a whole lot of people there, and if the gospel is fundamentally good news, then who receives that? Well, people do. And so we thought, okay, well, there's a whole lot of people rubbing elbows, squeezed into a really small space. Maybe that maximizes opportunity because we don't have to move around a lot. You can just step outside on the sidewalk and people are passing you all the time and you have a lot of opportunity in that. And so we thought, okay, the gospel's for people, so let's go where the people are. Because others see the need and some have agreed to work with us. This is highlighted again by the fact that Mike Wilson kind of already was like, hey, we need one of you here, right? Well, he got two of us. He got more than he bargained for. So that was part of it. Like, people that are on the ground in that area were saying, we need this. And then the other part, for me personally, and I'm just speaking from my perspective now, is that Josh said, hey, I would like to do that with you. And I said, well, who am I to stop this thing then? The fact that people are telling us they needed it, that they wanted it, and the fact that, like, we found each other to do it means that why maybe shouldn't we go? Right. And then finally on this list is a much more personal reason, and maybe is the reason that least can broadly apply in a room like this. But for Josh and I, having dedicated this much of our grown lives, I guess I could say it that way, adult lives, to teaching the gospel, we thought maybe this is the next step for us personally to see us grow, to test our faith and our convictions, to really push ourselves. And certainly that's not the case for everybody. Not everybody's going to like go down this path to do that. Not everybody's even, I wouldn't have been ready for this 5 years ago, I don't think. I'm not sure, frankly, if I'm ready now. But we saw this as a good point to show the Lord that we are trying. We're trying to be honest and we're trying to be diligent and we're trying to push ourselves. And so that was kind of the final thing that said, okay, this is for real. We're going to really try to do this. So I don't remember in our mini trips in the last couple years what trip we took this picture on. I don't even remember if Josh and Katie were with me when I took it. I don't think they were. I think I was there by myself doing a meeting at a church in the East Bay. Or, nope, I don't remember what I was doing. Scratch that. I was doing something in the East Bay. Don't remember. But we were in San Francisco for the day, and I had been told that there had been a church in the past that met right in the middle of San Francisco, and I had been told that by an elder at the church in Santa Clara. he and his wife grew up in the city. They met each other in the city. They were taught the gospel in the city. They both were baptized in the city. They were married there. Like, San Francisco had been their whole lives up through their early marriage. They were a part of this church in the city for a long time. And then due to circumstances that I don't know all the details about, this meeting space, this group kind of folded and went away. And he told me at its peak it was maybe 100 people or so. And this building here still has like the signage up and all this stuff. And I think it's been like 8 or 10 years since it's been gone. Maybe more than that. I don't know exactly. But for whatever reason, it's in use. I think it's a dance studio or something now. But the signs are still up, and it is on the street corner there. And like, the way that this photo's taken, if you're on this side of the street and you were to turn around, you'd be staring at City Hall. And if you were staring at this side of the street, it's like the Opera House. So I mean, it's like very much in the middle of the city. And I think from later conversations, I think that was part of the problem, is that that street got shut down for parades and stuff so much, people were having trouble getting to it. But I think there was also deeper issues than that. But I just think that's interesting evidence that, like, obviously God has done work here before, and certainly that doesn't preclude work and good things from happening again. And so I just thought this would be interesting to include, just to show you guys. I don't know if some of you have been going to San Francisco long enough. Maybe you met with this group. I think this might be kind of the more obvious part to talk about. Obviously, I think we all can generally guess at like what we hope to accomplish, right? But I think a few of these things are worth saying, just so that we share in a vision, just if nothing else, to kind of touch base with this. And that is, we want to locate people who may still be in the area. Like from maybe that met with that group in the past and are still in the city and they're going to other churches. We've been told by that elder that grew up there that he still has contact with a lot of those people. I don't know what that will mean for us, but he seems to believe that some of them have just fallen away and aren't really doing anything anymore. A lot of them have gone to churches nearby just because, like, that's what's around. And so they're working their best to kind of maybe put us in contact with some of those that they have contact with, so that when we get there, there'll be people that share a faith with us that we can kind of share in this vision and this work and this hope. Certainly Josh and I, many of you have asked us this question. We do plan to work together. We don't know where we're going to live yet. I've explained to some of you that I've been talking to an apartment broker, which I guess is a thing. She's telling me that I can't even come try to get a place until 2 weeks before I'm going to move. And so it's a really tight window just because the market is that way and it moves so quickly. And so because we can't figure that out yet, we don't know exactly where we're going to be living until like almost time to be there. So I don't know how close we might be in proximity to each other within the city, which we do plan to live within the city limits. But again, the city is so small that even if we're on opposite ends, we're really not too far away from each other. But we do plan to work together in this effort. We're not going to different congregations. We're not going to like divide and conquer, like in the strictest sense of like never seeing each other. We do plan to kind of team up in this. This third point, what I mean by here is, when I wrote this, I specifically meant for me in Atlanta. Josh has done a lot of the same stuff even in where he is in Tuscaloosa, but we plan to mimic some of the things that we've seen successful in not only our own experiences, but additionally in the experiences of other people that we kind of admire and look up to and can benefit from learning from, particularly some of our friends in like up and down the East Coast, like in Boston and New York and Philadelphia, some of these places where they've done some of this work in the cities. We've been asking questions and trying to learn like what's worked for them, how they go about doing things to make contacts, to meet people, to teach what's true. And so we hope to mimic some of those things. I'll give you an example of a few. In Atlanta, one of the things that we've done is we've tried to organize what I've been kind of calling community discussions, where we meet in kind of a neutral place, like a hotel meeting room, a library room, or something like that. And we have kind of a topic that a speaker's kind of address, but it's general, and it's usually phrased as a question. For instance, what did Jesus really teach about? And then we might have three sessions, and the first session is like money and wealth. Or the second session might be like relationships and marriage, right? And so that anyone that gets a flyer that's interested in coming can just say like, yeah, I wonder about that. And they can come and we can have honest discussions about those things. And we use that kind of as an outreach thing. Just come to this place that's unassuming. It's a library room. It's a hotel space. And come talk with us about this. Another thing that we've used is a website called Meetup. I know some of you are familiar with that. We've used that and had Bible studies and different weeknights or mornings or whatever throughout Atlanta. I know they've done it in Tuscaloosa as well. I know you guys have done it in some places around Kentucky and in Indiana. And it's a good way to just kind of maybe have a coffee, share in a Bible study, and meet people that are looking on the internet for Bible study opportunities. So those are just a couple examples of some of the things that we're going to plan to do. Of course, you can never replace just like living your life and being in your neighborhood and walking the sidewalks and talking to people, which is very much a part of what we plan to do. And ultimately, right, we hope and we pray that God would bless us with contacts, maybe Christians that are already in the area or teaching people and they become Christians, so that very soon we could have a group that's not just me and my wife and Josh and Katie and Milo worshiping together. People often ask us, you know, are you going to start a church? And I get what you mean by that, but I'm like, well, I don't really have control over that. But that is the hope, right? That God would look at San Francisco, and he probably already sees faithful people there, odds are. And hopefully he'll see faithful people becoming more abundant there due to the work that we're doing. And hopefully he'll see a group of people being unified with Christ as the head. And that's what we hope to try to offer opportunities to have and to be for each other. And so that's certainly step 1B, so to speak, in teaching the gospel, is then maybe meeting together to worship God. I don't know how much this is going to mean to many of you. If you're not familiar with Atlanta, it's probably not going to mean a ton. But I was just going to offer this as a point of reference. On the stage left, you have Atlanta, and on stage right, you have the Bay Area. And in Atlanta, that green dot, like right in the middle, is where me and my wife and some Christians are. And you'll notice that pretty quickly, like you have to go out like 10, 15 miles out of Atlanta until you get to about the perimeter, and then you start seeing some more churches. And what I mean by this is certainly, like, again, God knows whose are his, but what I'm kind of dropping pins are places I know personally that are not institutional churches, right? And so certainly God can sort through all that, but that's the pin placement that I have offered here. And so that's Atlanta on the left of the stage here. San Francisco on the right. You see there's a lot less pins. And you'll notice that it's a little more zoomed out. And so the green pins at the bottom are the San Jose area. That's where Mike is. In fact, since making this slideshow, is this the laser pointer? Yeah, right here. These two groups are actually now one group. They're worshiping together now, and Mike's a member there. He's an evangelist there. So now there's even, not that it matters because it's functionally still the same, but that's kind of one pin now. And you can see it's kind of down here. And as you go up the peninsula and certainly up into San Francisco, there's really not anything. I know that there's a couple institutional churches kind of in this upper peninsula area, and I hope to visit them and kind of talk with them and see if there's any common ground that we can come to. But who knows with that? I'm not totally sure. And so as far as churches that I've been told about as being non-institutional churches that we could agree with about certain things, this is kind of what it looks like. And certainly this is imperfect knowledge, but it gives us an example of kind of what we're looking at. This church actually here on Alameda, I actually can't really figure out like what's going on with that. It may exist, it may not. I'm not totally sure. So even among these pins, there's still some uncertainty. And so I just wanted to share that with you guys. All right, and this is the honesty part here. I don't know how common or uncommon it is to share these kinds of things. I've never really done this before, so you're just going to kind of go through this with me here. There's a lot of potential, like, anxiety and fear that comes with stepping outside of your comfort zone. And that's certainly, I think, what this is for all of us. Josh Carter often says, well, Josh Lewis has sort of done something like this, so he kind of knows what he's doing. And like, it's going to be a little like more new for us, he and his wife, Katie. And I get what he's saying in that, but oftentimes in my head, I'm like, no. Like, I'm glad you think that, and I'm glad I'm like putting that out there, but I'm not sure that's totally true. But there's a lot of, I guess, fears and anxieties that can come with this. Moving far away to an unfamiliar place where, as far as I know, the five of us don't have any family. We don't have any like friends that we've known. We're starting to make some through this process, but it's all new to us. That can be a bothering thing. Like, some personalities handle that better than others, but pretty much across the board, that's not really fun for anybody, right? It's not exciting for a lot of people. It's not particularly a fun thing to think about being a five-hour flight away from all of your family. It's not really fun to think about leaving the church in Atlanta that we were there from the beginning with. It's really sad to think about that. And I know Josh and Katie feel the same way about Tuscaloosa. It's not fun to think about leaving the friends we've made or the families that we have, or even in an odd way, the cities that we're in. Maybe you guys understand what I mean by that. Like, I know a city isn't like a personality, but it kind of is. You get used to it and you kind of know the vibe of it and you like familiar things and all that stuff. Like, Atlanta was new to us a few years ago. Tuscaloosa was new to the Carters a few years ago. And now we like it. And it's weird to think about leaving it. I was telling Josh the other day, I was like, you know, this sounds weird, but I really like the personality of Atlanta. I like the culture of it. And I don't so much with San Francisco. And so it's not fun to think about that transition, that switch. We worry about, like, how are things going to work out? Like, what's going to happen to us? Like, is this going to work? You know, are we going to look dumb if this doesn't work out? And like, we've wasted a lot of people's time and resources. Will we be able to afford it? That's the big question for the Bay Area, right? Like, do we have enough money? Like, are we going to be able to take care of our families? And like, are we making bad decisions? Are we going to do something that's detrimental to them? Like, we worry about this stuff. And of course, there's the logistics that are never fun to deal with, right? Like, who enjoys moving? If anyone raises their hand to that question, you're crazy, right? No one enjoys moving. No one enjoys thinking about money. No one enjoys worrying about housing or losing friends and family or having to start over. Like, nobody likes that, really. We're not immune to that. Like, we're kind of dreading all of those same things. And I don't say this for any other reason, just to, like, maybe give you encouragement that, like, we're no different. Like, this frightens us to some level. Like, and how you guys are helping us with that is, like, telling us constantly, like, this is good. Like, that this is something valuable. Because there's a lot of doubts that can creep into our minds about this. You guys are helping us by telling us that you're praying for us. That means a lot. It really does mean a lot to us, because there's a lot of fears that can come on with this. And so I just want you guys to know that we're the same as you. I know you know that, but like, sometimes it's hard to really know that. And that you really have done a lot of good for us in this weekend, even. And kind of recharging our batteries and making us excited about this and like pushing out some of those fears that Satan tries to get us to dwell on, right? But of course, we know Jesus says, and God teaches us to cast our anxieties on him, right? And so that's what you guys are reminding us to do. So thank you. One of the unfortunate experiences about choosing to move to a place like San Francisco has been some of the negativity that's arisen in this decision-making process. And I don't mean to like call anyone out or make anyone feel bad about that. And certainly no one here has really done this. But like, when you make big decisions, right, that gives opportunity for commentary and criticism and encouragement and all the like, right? When you open your life up to some change, you experience it when you take a new job or when you decide to have kids or when you, who you marry or where you move to. Like, it happens all the time, and this is no different. And thankfully, Josh Carter, when that kind of thing happens to him, he wants to like charge forward even more confidently. Like, it gives him resolve. I don't know if I'm built exactly that way, but I'm thankful that he is. And so, like, he's often said things like this, and it's been helpful for me to reflect on it, because it does remind me that, like, though we certainly are trying to do exactly what Josh talked about this morning, and that's, like, accomplish the will of God, the glory of discipleship, right? And we think about the future glory that God has in store for us. All of those things remind us that while we have a role in this, God is always able to do what he wills to do. And so that's helpful for us. We think about Nineveh. Like, Jonah was probably the worst prophet ever. Like, he was no good. And he was maybe the most successful prophet ever. That gives me hope, because I feel like Jonah sometimes, right? You think about Rome. Like, who'd have thought there'd be churches in Rome? Maybe, like, historically one of the least appreciated places in a moral sense, right? Corinth, as Josh mentioned earlier today, is kind of in that same boat, a sailor's town. And God says he had many people there, right? Don't worry about things. I have many people here, he tells Paul. And this is where Luke 18 comes back into play. If you want to look at it again, you can zero in on the verse here, verse 27. In the conversation with the man that we often call the rich young ruler, because he does seem to be rich, he does seem to be young, obviously has some authority. At the end of that conversation, unfortunately, when that young man kind of like walks away and doesn't accept kind of the call that Jesus is offering him to discipleship, one of the things that's said once the disciples that are there kind of look around and they say, we've done it. Like, we fit that bill. Look at what it said here. Those who heard it said, who can be saved? Right? Because Jesus had just talked about how hard it is for a rich man to be saved, right? Imagine a camel trying to go through the eye of a needle. It's like that. So they're like, well, who can do it then? This is what Jesus says. What is impossible with man is possible with God. That's really like what underpins everything that we've chosen to try to accomplish here. Is in all the doubts and all the fears and all the logistics that are thrown our way and all the choices, so, you know, we're trying to say is, should we stay in Atlanta? That's good. Should we go to San Francisco? That seems good. Well, which good thing do we do? Like, all of these confusions and fears. I just remember this verse. Like, man, it seems impossible to do the right thing, to make it, to be a disciple, to go down that path, to get through that needle, whatever. Well, yeah, it is with you, right? It is. But with God, it's possible. And you know what the disciples say after that? Well, we've done that, right? We've done that. And what's amazing about this, when I first, like, if I can think about first reading this, my gut instinct is Jesus is going to be like, psh, that's a foolish thing to say, or like, keep going, or like, you're not there yet. But actually what he says is this, truly I say to you, there is no one who has left house or wife or brothers or parents or children for the sake of the kingdom of God, who will not receive many times more in this time and in the age to come eternal life. There's that glory of discipleship again. And you know what he actually says to them? I think he's affirming that they have done that. And he's telling them, and you have a reward for doing that. And that's what we're clinging to. Which begs the question for all of us, right? You know, Josh and I mean, I think they are big plans. We have big plans, and in a lot of ways, they're kind of cool and, like, interesting to talk about. But they're no different than your plans, really. Like, are you getting out of your comfort zone for the gospel? You may not be moving to San Francisco. You may not be, like, having to go through, like, logistics or, you know, raise money or whatever. But, like, are you going out of your comfort zone to do what you know is right? Because that's all we're trying to do. And I imagine that's what you're trying to do. And even though, like, the nuts and bolts of it might be specifically different, ultimately, we all kind of end up in Luke 18 with the questions Jesus asks the young man. We're all answering those questions. We're all deciding whether or not we're going to come follow him and sell all that we have. We're all deciding whether or not we really believe that all things are possible with God. And we're all deciding whether or not we have really left homes and mothers and brothers and sisters to follow him so that we know we have eternal life in the age to come. We're all considering these things. And we're all looking at our comfort zones and our what's familiar to us and asking the question, am I doing what God wants me to do? And am I doing more today? Am I stretching myself more today than I did yesterday? And am I more mature and more faithful, more convicted than I was a week ago or 2 weeks ago? Are you doing the kingdom work? I hope that this has not only offered information about San Francisco, and I know we just kind of skimmed over it. I hope that that was interesting and helpful for you. But maybe more importantly is that you're thinking about, when you think about us, you think about you. Right? And maybe when you're thinking about you, you remember to pray for us too. Like, that's what we're going to be trying to do. And so I hope everyone here can honestly say, as the Lord looks at you and you look at him, that you are doing what you can for the kingdom. Because the only one that you're cheating, if you don't answer that honestly, is you. So if there's anyone here this evening that can't answer that with a yes and be honest about that, and you want help in how to move forward and be able to move more towards that yes, I know the elders, the evangelists here, the deacons, your brother to your left, your sister to your right, would be happy to see you ask for that help. And so during this song is your time to let someone know that you need that. Please come while we sing.